Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Have a holly commander Christmas. That didn't work as good as that.
Clicky kakimas. That's not it either. Wiki laki wa. Wiki idiotrekimas. Merry Christmas.
Milly
kaliki maka. There it is. That's not what you were singing, though.
Because it's Commander Christmas, everybody.
It is, and it's come early in August. How's it going, everyone? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And it is time, as you can see, the wonderful, bountiful display of gifts in front of us for four brand new decks of Commander 2017 to be out.
And we can finally talk about them. We've been holding them for a very long time because of game nights. We had this stuff early, but now you all know about all the cards, so we're allowed to bust them out and chat. And this is going to be our sort of first look show. So we are going to do a lot of extra content in the coming weeks because Commander product is such a big deal for us, obviously, in our show. We're going to start, and this first look is just kind of an overview of the entirety of the Commander 2017 set.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff to go through.
Yeah, there really is. So we're not going to get real specific on this episode. We're just going to sort of take a broad look at all the new cards, what's been reprinted, what hasn't. That kind of thing. And then we will have following episodes. We've got a lot planned, breaking down each single pre-con, breaking down some of the new commanders. We've asked some of our friends to construct decks around some of the new commanders.
We're going to be supplying a lot of commander stuff to you. Actually, on that note, if you are a first-time listener, a first-time watcher, or you know someone that is interested in getting into Commander, please tell them to subscribe and find the Command Zone podcast either on YouTube or on the podcast, because this entire next couple of weeks will be dedicated towards Commander 2017. It can get anyone's foot in the door and is a great way to start for new players.
Make sure they watch the new Game Nights, too, which just came out, and that's a good look at how these decks are going to play and how much fun they are. And spoiler alert, they're a lot of fun.
They are a lot of fun.
All right,
they usually are.
Yeah, they always are. And, anyway, before we get into it, we need to talk about our awesome sponsors. Card Kingdom is going to be the best place for you to go to actually pick up this product. So if you're watching the show, you're a Commander fan, and Commander fans are going to want these things. If you use our affiliate link, which is cardkingdom.com/C17, it'll take you directly to the page where you can pre-order these Commander 2017 pre-cons. And we're going to talk about them all today. Personally, I'm getting all of them.
Yeah, I am too.
We always do, so that's no big surprise. But even if you want to cherry pick, you know, after listening to some of our reviews about which one you want, that's still going to be the place to go. Because when you order cards through Card Kingdom that way, not only are you getting the Magic cards that you want, you're also helping the Command Zone and Game Nights, you know, stay on, keep the lights on, as we always say, and keep coming out. So we really appreciate all that support.
And specifically, the new affiliate link, because it's Commander 2017, is cardkingdom.com/C17. So make sure you use that if you're going to be buying some Commander product. All right, our other sponsor for the show is Ultra Pro. Obviously, they do a great job making a lot of really awesome products, including what you're seeing in front of you. They have these deck boxes that are themed to each commander. They fit 100 cards sleeved easily with the tokens, as well as themed sleeves for each of the decks. And you actually can't see it here, but if I flip this around, you'll see that these have the new backs, the gray backs that the Eclipse sleeves have.
And we call it the Eclipse technology. I don't know if that's the official, what they officially deem it, but that's what we call it.
Because I know that full art, like, prints are usually a little more rough hewn. They can break apart more easily. With this stuff inside out, actually, they've improved it quite a bit. And we shuffle these up for game nights, and I enjoy the process immensely.
Yeah. And you can get the playmats. Ultra Pro also makes the matching playmats. So you can have deck box, sleeves, playmats, all themed around your new commander. It's pretty sweet.
It is pretty sweet.
The other way to support the show is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You can contribute directly to the show. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to Felix Thomas. Felix. You rock.
You also have a really cool name.
You do have a cool name. And you got that superhero thing where you have two first names.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like Josh Lee Kwai. Or Jimmy Wong. All right, let's get into it. It's our main topic, Commander 2017. First look. You're looking at it for the first time, and let's unpack what's inside.
Yep, tribal. So that's what we've been sold. But there's actually a whole bunch of stuff in here that's for non-tribal decks, which is exciting to me because I've said before, tribal's not my favorite thing ever. Although this set has gotten me a little more excited about tribal than normal.
Me too.
So we're going to take a broad look, like we said, not breaking it down into real in-depth specifics. We'll wait for later for that. But I said we're going to look at the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Ha-ha! Ur-Dragon. I see what you did
there. You got that? You got that?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, let's start with the obvious, the new legendaries. So there are some reprints and whatnot of legendary creatures, but there are 16 brand new legendaries.
16? I thought there were only four, one per deck. How does that work, Josh?
They always do three per deck in every year, but in some years they've done more, and in this one there's actually four per deck, although I don't know if it breaks down exactly like that. One might have five, one might have three. I didn't break it down that way. But there's 16 total. Some are not, when you buy the pre-con, some of them you won't be able to run as the commander of that deck because, like, well, like this one, Balin, the Wandering Knight, is a mono white commander.
Right.
So, but that is a new legendary card. But if you take the pre-con, you can't really run Balin as your commander because what do you do with all the green cards?
Yeah.
So there's a few that are like that. There's some two color ones. There's two different Tygams.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because there's two different timelines on Tarkir. So.
It's interesting, you wrote this down here, that only the four main legends, the ones that are the sort of the leaders of each box, are tribal-focused. Every other legendary card in here isn't tribal necessarily, but it provides a whole list of new options for that color, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's exciting. So you even if the tribal thing doesn't excite you, there's going to be something in here for you. But the Eminence Commanders that are the lead singers of each deck are the tribal commanders. But there's at least two other options to run in the deck for the colors that they are, and sometimes more. So I did a little breakdown just so we could take a broad look at what the new legendaries, sort of what categories they fall into. So there's the four tribal ones. I'll call those the Eminence commanders. They're the only four with Eminence. And then there are two equipment-focused commanders. Our buddies at the Commander and Podcast, their spoiler card was Nazan, who actually comes with his own hammer. So Nazan and his hammer, they're
pretty
related.
Cool card.
I won't read the card exactly,
and
but that's one
Balin
of the equipment.
As well.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
There's four that are sort of combat focused. And by that, I mean they say if you deal combat damage or when you attack, they have to do with combat and attacking. There's two that are involved with sort of instants and sorceries. And interestingly, one of those ones, Kess, which was Alex Kessler's preview card or spoiler card.
Very fitting.
You know, normally we're used to seeing that in red and blue, and they added black to Kess. So that's I think that's sort of what makes that card interesting is there's a whole other color you wouldn't normally get with that.
Right.
There's one that's kind of big mana. That's Ramos, which we'll talk about in a second.
My boy.
That's sort of a combo-y big mana one. There's one that's involved with activated abilities, which I'm super excited about. Again, talk about that in a second. There's one that's involved with life gain, and there's really only one that's sort of involved with graveyard recursion or messing with your graveyard, and that's one of the Tygams.
Yeah, and there's actually, not outside of these legendary creatures, there are other ones that are reprints.
Correct.
So there are a couple, like Kemble is more of a token-y build and goes in the deck. So
there's Vela, Vela. There's some other ones. But we're talking only about the new ones. So as far as like new commanders you haven't had access to before, that's sort of how it breaks down.
That's
so,
pretty sweet. You know, I am a little sad that they didn't print any partner commanders this time around.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of knew they wouldn't. They never repeated, really, and especially not that quickly. So it's not surprising, but man, I would love to have more partner options. I feel like that's something we'll get in the future, right?
I definitely think we'll get in the future. And also, we have not even come close to exploring the full territory of what you can do with the current ones anyway.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So. Okay, so Jimmy, we've got 16 new legendaries. Which one are you most excited about?
This has been the one that I've been excited about from the beginning. It's Ramos, Dragon Engine. He's a 6-drop legendary artifact creature dragon that's a 4/4 with flying. So lame. But whenever you cast a spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Ramos for each of that spell's colors. This screams Josh Lee Kwai.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is you can remove 5 +1/+1 counters from Ramos, and you can add Progenitus mana to your mana pool, which is 2 of each of the colors, and you can only do this once per turn, but you can do it at instant speed. It's pretty cool. Not to mention that you can cast this commander without having perfect mana because he is colorless, or she. I don't know. I'm just excited for this card because I'm finally going to be able to build a 5-color dragon deck that isn't Scion or Ur-Dragon.
It doesn't have to be dragon either. Like it doesn't care about dragon specifically. It just cares about you casting stuff with a lot of different colors.
Right.
Yeah, this card, it should be my favorite card or most exciting card from the set. but it has to fall to the numbers two slot for me. But I am very excited about Ramos. It just seems like you can do a lot of broken stuff.
Yeah, you can definitely do a lot of broken stuff. It seems like you can see it from a long way coming. The cool thing is you can use a lot of different ways to put plus one counters on Ramos as well.
Good
so
point.
It's not just casting like a five-color spell. But it's absurd amount of ramp. It's absurd amount. Like, you can cast Progenitus off this. This is crazy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's probably a lot of cards that allow you to put enough counters on it that you actually gain mana by doing it.
Right.
Right. So,
and you get a color, if it's like a two-color spell, you get an additional two plus one counters just from that spell alone or whatever.
Yeah, good point.
So, interesting card.
I think that card's going to be pretty sweet. Some fun decks. The one I'm looking forward to the most is Marisil the Pretender. Marisil is one and Grixis, so four mana total for a 4/4 human wizard, legendary creature. It's an interesting card. When Marisil enters the battlefield, you may exile an artifact or creature card from your hand or graveyard and put a cage counter on it. So either take a card from your hand or your graveyard, artifact or creature, and you put it off to the side and mark it. And then Marisil the Pretender has all activated abilities of all cards you own in exile with cage counters on them, but you may activate each of those abilities only once each turn.
Right.
Which they tried to make it fair. I guarantee you there are ways to break that part of it. But I said this earlier where I think Marisil is kind of like that character on the TV show Heroes.
Siler, yeah.
Who could like steal the abilities of like other people's. And so eventually Siler got to the point where he just had a ton of abilities because he was stealing. Now, Siler had to kill the people to get it. But Marisil,
arguably he didn't, though. I think we learned that later. When Heroes got better as the seasons went on, of course.
Wait, what? It got so bad. Anyway, so Marisil, I love activated abilities, you know, Tim Deck style stuff, and this just seems like a really cool one with a lot of like interesting synergy potential. And the fact that they put that you can only activate those abilities once each turn, I think is good. Like, it makes it so that it's harder to go infinite.
Oh yeah, certainly. I mean, because you can just combine two cards that can go infinite together, and then Marisil is just a self infinite engine or whatever.
But Marisil also steals the activated abilities of artifacts.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. You can be a Mana Rock.
Think of like,
right?
Yeah, or like Nivinrael's Disc or something where it doesn't come into play tapped because it doesn't get that part of it. It just gets the activated ability.
Yeah, you just get to have Marisil as a disc.
Yeah, or Basalt Monolith just taps for 3 minutes. Like, there's a lot of interesting things. So
Just the activated ability so it doesn't get the doesn't untap.
The downside, yeah, exactly. So,
whoa.
There's a lot of cool things. I haven't really thought it all out, but I'm pretty sure we're going to do an episode about it at some point. I'm sure we'll do Ramos also.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to build Ramos. You know, this would actually be really good in your Marchesa five-color deck.
Yeah, I think so.
Because the plus one counters is nice, and the fact that you can, you know, you're looking to cast some crazy stuff in that deck anyway.
Yeah, and it would be harder to kill because it's going to have plus one counters, and then Marchesa brings it back. I like it. Okay, so we're not going to talk about all of them. Obviously, we're going to move on here. We will go in more in depth when we do the reviews for each deck. So,
ooh, let's talk about Eminence.
Yeah, so let's talk about the big mechanic from the set, which is Eminence.
It's broken.
It's very powerful. Now, we've had we're lucky because of Game Nights, we had a chance to play with these decks, so we've seen it in action. Like we said, there's four commanders that have Eminence, and Eminence is ability that works either from your command zone or from play. So I'll just read Edgar Markov just so we have some look at Eminence. All the Eminence work slightly differently, but they all work in the command zone or on the battlefield. So Edgar says, Eminence, whenever you cast another vampire spell, if Edgar Markov is in the command zone or on the battlefield, you create a 1/1 black vampire creature token. So anytime you cast a vampire, pretty much wherever Edgar is, I mean, I guess you could let him go to the graveyard sometimes or come back to your hand, but in general, he's going to be in the command zone or in play.
Yeah.
You just get a vampire. You don't have to do anything else. You just get a 1/1 vampire.
The fact that these all work outside the command zone reminds me of Alloro, and that there are so many people that complain about Alloro being like sort of breaking the format of how the game works. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. I do like all of the Eminence abilities. I like the cat one a lot, actually, because it doesn't specify it needs to be a cat, right?
No, you have to have a target cat.
Oh, darn. Yeah. Never mind. I was just kidding. Yeah, so all the tribal Eminence abilities are tribal Eminence, so it does take it down a notch in terms of the power level.
Yeah.
But it's still very powerful in a deck that's dedicated to doing that thing. Just because, you know, I said this in the game nights, and I said it in the last episode, too, or one of the episodes, that I didn't even want to cast my commander after a while. I was like, what's the point? I could waste my mana on this and still get the ability if I didn't waste it.
You said this also, I think, which is that it's very similar to starting the game with an enchantment.
Yeah.
Although an enchantment that can't be gotten rid of. It's kind of more like an emblem, I guess, but you have an effect that's going to affect your entire deck, and you don't have to spend any mana to cast it. You don't have to make sure you draw it. You're just going to get that effect. It's very powerful. I think Edgar's kind of the best one.
I think Ur-Dragon might be up there.
It just makes your dragons cost one less, though.
Yeah, but you know, it adds up. Yeah, I do like, I mean, having that ability is like you got ramped across 80 different, you know, not
true,
80 different
true.
Cards. You ramped across all your cards. But Edgar's is crazy because when he comes in and does his thing, then he like works really well with both sides of his cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Erebos good. Again, it's one of those things that I think doesn't scale great later. Inala. I think Inala can be broken. Inala might be my second.
Inala definitely
favorite.
Can be broken, but not in the precon that she's built into.
Yeah, that deck seems a little bit. Well, we'll talk about
but
it.
But we'll
later.
Discuss that. Yeah. If you guys didn't know, we do breakdowns of each of the decks, usually in pairs. But now that there are only four decks this time, we only have to do two episodes. Sometimes we do 2-2-1. It's a
yeah,
little awkward.
It's a little awkward.
But yeah, we'll definitely talk about the decks and their power level and how to level them up. That's one of the things we do in our slate of programming for Commander yearly products.
For Commander Christmas.
Commander Christmas.
So an interesting thing about this year is there's no like overall mechanic. In years past, there was like the Undaunted mechanic.
Right.
And there was like the Myriad mechanic. And this year, there isn't. They didn't sort of make a new multiplayer mechanic for the whole format. Now, they did some weird stuff. Like there's a card with Goad.
Oh, yeah.
There's a card with Phasing.
Phasing. So, that card is, I love this
yeah,
card, by the way.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that card. But they didn't bring back an overall like mechanic that sort of ties everything together like they have in yeah. years past. So that's an interesting choice. I don't know what it means, but maybe they felt they're not constrained by doing that every time now.
Yeah, and also Eminence does seem like a big enough thing that it's interesting because they've.
Yeah,
they've,
that's a good point.
If you look at the kinds of cards you have in these decks, it spans a much larger. I think this is. I like this set a lot because it seems like there's a ton of utility packed into each of the decks.
Mm-hmm.
And except for maybe the Cat one because it's so equipment themed. But like just looking at all the Grixis commanders in the Inala deck, they're very different from another. Marisol could not be more different than Inala.
Yeah, it's true.
So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the new stuff that's sort of in the 99. So moving past the commanders and everything, there's a few cycles and then there's some cards that are repeated. You know, mm-hmm. they'll... There's one card that's in all of the decks.
Yeah, Path of Ancestry.
Yeah, it's a new land.
And it's a common. Doesn't matter because it's a commander product. But this is a land I think we'll see. Just it's one of those cards that we made like a commander template. This is a card that you just put in there.
Yeah, I think this goes in a lot of decks. Not necessarily every deck, but it's very, very good.
Any three-color deck and up, I would put this in there. So Path of Ancestry enters the battlefield tapped. And you can tap it to add to your mana pool one mana of any color in your commander's color identity. So that's the same as Command Tower.
Mm-hmm.
When that mana is spent to cast a creature spell that shares a creature type with your commander, scry one. So you said this really well. In a lot of decks, this is just an Enters the Battlefield tri-land.
Which is playable in most three-color decks and up.
Yeah.
Definitely four and five, you want this card for sure.
Heck yeah.
Because there's no land that taps for four mana, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And you're not even going to necessarily need the scry part of it if it's just a four-color mana land. Like, if you could put another Command Tower in your deck that enters the battlefield tapped, would you do it?
Yes.
If the answer is yes, then you're definitely putting this in there. If you happen to occasionally get scry one out of it, then awesome. You only need to do that a couple of times to really, like, get max value, I think, out of something like this.
Yeah, I think once you're at two-color, it's not as good because you wouldn't play just a Guildgate or a scry land. And so how often do you have to scry to make that worth it? I think at least...
I think you still play scry lands, but I agree.
I mean, it
makes your mana base clunkier for no reason.
Yeah, this I mean, scry land's obviously better than a Guildgate, but it's... I don't know. I think scry lands are good. They're not great. You all usually play shock lands. I think you can play it. It's not optimal, right, in two-color decks. Unless, again, you have, like... If you're playing like an elf as your commander and you've got at least 10 elves in your deck, then I think it's totally worth it, right? You're going to scry at least twice off it, probably.
Yeah.
Three color, you have to scry less because it's giving you more utility from the extra color.
Yeah.
I like it. I mean, I think we're going to see it a lot on the battlefield. And a lot of people, and myself included, and you too, because we have so many decks, right? So like our top five decks, yeah, they're running with great optimal mana bases.
Yeah.
Once you get down to my 6th, 7th, 8th deck, I'm running a lot of janky lands because I just don't have that many awesome lands.
Janky lands, Lee Kwai.
Yeah, so, you know, once you get down to my lower decks, this is going in a lot of them because, yeah, it'd be great if I had old school dual lands and shock lands for every single deck, but I don't. So this is just fine in those sort of, you know, middle tier decks.
And definitely put it in any decks that have tribal themes.
Yep.
Or even just like a bunch of humans, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. I bet you'll notice that a lot of your decks, oh, well, I just have like my commander's a human, and I just happen to have like 8 or 9 humans in the deck. It's not a tribal deck. It just happens to have that, in which case this land is going to be pretty good.
Yeah. There are two cycles in the set. The first is the Curse cycle. Do you want to read all of these? I think they're all really interesting to talk about. Regardless.
We can just each one enchants a player, and then if any player attacks the Curse player, they get an effect. So we can just read the effects. So
the white one, Vitality, is whenever enchanted player is attacked, you gain 2 life, and then each opponent attacking that player does the same. So everyone, you gain 2. It's really weird text.
Yeah.
So you put this on the player, and then when you attack them, you get the effect, and when anyone else attacks them, they get the effect, and you also get it. And we actually messed up this part of the interaction on the last game nights, if you noticed. It was a little confusing because it doesn't actually work like the old original curses in Magic.
The blue one, when the enchant player is attacked, draw a card. Each opponent attacking that player does the same.
So that one's pretty good. That's pretty big incentive, right? If you put the blue one on, people are going to want to attack that player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it does... It's sort of like you're playing Arch Enemy a little bit by forcing everyone to attack one person. And it's, as we found in Game Nights, it's hard to argue against. It's like, well, I'm not going to not attack you if I'm going to get a card from it.
Yeah, like, I'm going to get value. So.
Imagine if they have a free block, too. Then it's like, I'm always attacking you.
Yep.
It only happens once, by the way. It's not for every creature.
Right. So you could, if you have 5 creatures, you can just attack one at the person with the curse and then the other 4 at, you know, who you really want to attack.
Curse of Disturbance, which is the black one. Whenever a chained player is attacked, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. All right, not bad. I mean, getting just a free creature off an attack isn't bad at all.
Yep.
Opulence, this is the one I like the most.
Surprisingly good.
Yeah, for the red one, red deck too.
And it only costs 1 red mana.
Uh-huh. Whenever enchanted player is attacked, create a colorless artifact token named Gold. It has sacrifice as artifact, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So it just gives you mana ramp.
Yeah, it just gives you one of those gold tokens.
And then the green one is really interesting. Whenever enchanted player is attacked, untap all non-land permanents you control. Each opponent attacking that player untaps all non-land permanents he or she controls. So... that's kind of cool. That's Combo City. Play it in like your Rishkar deck, right?
Oh god, it'd be so good in Rishkar. It's true. I do want to point out that it's the same guy in all the art.
Yeah.
So Mel Lee pointed that out to us when she was on Game Nights, and they call it like the most unluckiest planeswalker.
Yeah, the unluckiest planeswalker.
This poor guy's just having a really bad day.
I like the Curse of Opulence one though, because he's like, whoa, they're all throwing money. Whoa.
Yeah, I got money just spilling out of my pockets. What's going on?
Yeah, and the Verbosity one is it's the free information is happening because he's getting drunk at the table, which I think is really interesting.
And
everyone's like
everybody.
Listening in, yeah.
Yeah. I think the white one's pretty bad.
Yeah,
the red
one
and the blue one might be playable. Maybe. They're not great. These are among the first cards I would say to take out probably when you're building it. But you know what? It's not like they do nothing.
I think in any game they're going to do a surprising amount of work, both from the novelty factor. I kind of like the idea of you know, when they came down, I was like, heck yeah, I'm attacking this person. I want this benefit. And then the green one, I think if you have a deck that can really combo with it, then you should go all out.
There's a second cycle of cards. And again, there's one in each color. It's the Kindred cycle, and these are tribal-themed effects. So there's Kindred Boon, which is the white one. It's 2 white-white for an enchantment. They all say as you enter the battlefield, you choose a creature type, or when you cast it, you choose a creature type.
Mm-hmm.
This one is as it enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type. And then you can pay 1 and a white and put a divinity counter on target creature you control of the chosen type. So if you're in the cat deck, you declare cats as you play this. And then at any time, you can pay 1 and a white and put a divinity counter on the cat. And then each creature you control with a divinity counter on it has indestructible. So
pretty good. I like that.
This is interesting because there are cards from the past, from Kamigawa, that actually have divinity counters or get them or they matter. And so they already come in with divinity counters. Like, there's probably some combo-tastic stuff you can do with that. I think most of those are spirits. So, and it's probably just good if you're just protecting, you know, normal run-of-the-mill stuff. You have a tribal deck or something with enough of a tribe. So it might even be good enough if you just choose the creature type of your commander in some decks.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The blue one is called Kindred Discovery. I got this one out in Game Nights, and it was pretty good. It's 3 blue-blue for an enchantment. As it enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type. And then whenever a creature you control of the chosen type enters the battlefield or attacks, you draw a card. This one's pretty high value because you play a creature, you already get the card back. And then when it attacks, you get another card. And if more than one attack, you get draw more than one card.
Yeah.
Yeah. This with the Locust God.
Oh, my goodness.
I think it just goes straight infinite. Although I think it might kill you immediately.
Yeah, it's not a May ability. So all you have to do is
the Locust God a May ability? Like, do you have to make the Locust or not?
That would actually, I think that might be a We'll find out very soon. Yeah, so what happens is all you need to do is draw one card with Kindred Discovery on the battlefield, and then Locust God will trigger from drawing the card. And
make a Locust. Make that triggers Kindred Discovery.
Yeah, and then they'll just keep going. So it is not a May ability.
Oh, so if you play this with Locust God, you're going to kill yourself unless you want to mill yourself out at that moment.
Yeah, but it is a two-card combo. Kindred Discovery into Locust God into one draw. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all, folks.
That's all, folks. This seems pretty good in any tribal deck. Again, these are all tribal focus, so you have to have enough critical mass of that creature type to make it worth it.
They're also very high mana cost. Yeah. Kindred Boon is 4 mana, Kindred Discovery is 5, and this next one.
This next one is 7 mana, so it's Kindred Dominance. It's 5 black for a sorcery. You choose a creature type and destroy all creatures that aren't of the chosen type. So it's kind of a one-sided board wipe for 7 mana.
Not very good the more common your creature type is. If you're like humans.
Humans, not as good.
Dragons, maybe. Birds.
You're probably fine if it's birds, although I don't know why you're in black. I don't know if that's good. In Garruk's Wake is 9 mana and just destroys all creatures and planeswalkers you don't control.
Yeah.
7 and 9, there's a big difference there. I don't know. That card might be playable.
Okay, the green one is Kindred Summons, also 7 mana. 5 green. Instant. Choose a creature type. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal X creature cards of the chosen type, where X is the number of creatures you control of that type. And then the rest get shuffled into your library. But those cards go onto the battlefield. So let's say you have 5 elves. You cast this. You reveal the top 5 cards.
You reveal cards until you get 5 elves.
5 elves, yeah. So this card is actually potentially a game winner, right? This could just drive you right into the big combo pieces you need to win if you build your deck in a way that's like... Actually,
especially elves, man, because you might have like 12 elves on the battlefield.
This is the crazy thing. You could do this with, let's say you're like, I'm going to choose creature type human.
Guaranteed
one thing's going to come out of your deck if you build your deck to only have one other human.
Yeah, if your commander is a certain type and it combos with another card of the other type, this will guarantee to get you it as long as that's the only other like that type in your deck.
Yeah, you have to have one of that creature on the battlefield.
But if it's your commander.
Yeah, but if it's your commander.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Or let's say the Locust God. If the only other god in your deck is Purphoros, you guaranteed are going to get Purphoros out, right? Something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Listen, we're not judges, so don't yell at us if we're getting some of these rulings wrong.
Because no, it's correct.
New cards always get us in trouble.
We never made a mistake.
But it feels correct.
I haven't made a single mistake today. Kindred Charge. 4 red for a sorcery. This is the red one. Choose a creature type. For each creature you control of the chosen type, create a token that's a copy of that creature. Those tokens gain haste, and then they exile at the beginning of the next end step.
So you kind of kiki-jiki everything once.
Yeah, everything of the chosen type. Yeah, but that's still really powerful, I think. It is 6 mana, though, but if you're able to sack those guys into more mana, then it's not as big of a waste. It's just tough with these cards costing that much.
I mean, there's got to be a Goblin deck where that kind of wins you the game, is my guess.
Certainly.
And again, with Purphoros.
Or even just
like
choosing,
that.
Like,
seems
insect,
expensive for that.
Right? You could play this in the Locust God deck.
Doesn't, like, Second Harvest just double all your tokens? I guess this makes tokens of creatures that aren't tokens, though.
Yes.
I'm iffy on that card. It seems okay. The green one seems really good, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think. It's 7 mana, though. You can almost just tooth and nail for that amount.
Yeah. I mean, once you're at 7 mana, you should be tooth and nailing if that's the kind of win you're going for.
Yeah. Although it's green, you're going to have a lot of mana. So there's those are the two cycles, so we're going to move on from that. There are 3 cards that are sort of multiples in each deck. They're artifacts, and they're not in every deck, but there's like, they're in 2 of the decks or they're in 3 of the decks. The first one is Heirloom Blade. That's 3 mana for an artifact equipment. It costs 1 to equip, and target creature gets +3/+1. But then it says, whenever equipped creature dies, you may reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card that shares a creature type with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put that card into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So
this is almost a better Kindred Summons, except it doesn't go on the battlefield. You could do the same thing, right?
Yeah, and it's
cheaper. If you're going for that specific, I only want to find one card.
Although, if it's your commander, you have to let it die. So it has to go to the graveyard for that to happen. It makes it a little tougher. It's just good value, I think, in like a cat deck or something like that where just now when that creature dies, you're going to get a card to replace it.
That or you only play 2 pairs of every creature type in your deck.
So that everything gets one
specific
thing.
Always going to get one specific thing, yeah.
It seems okay.
Yeah.
It's only 1 to equip, so I like that part about it. Once you get it out, it's fairly cheap to sort of move it around and get value.
And the thing is, the fact that whenever it dies, you just get a card is pretty sweet.
I wonder if in like Shadowborn Apostles, it'd be worth it. You move it over, sack it, That gives you the mana. You get another Shadowborn Apostle.
Yeah.
And you can keep doing that. I don't know what.
You could get a lot of mana if you're doing if you have Ashnod's Altar out.
Yeah, you're getting extra mana that way.
You get one mana for the equip.
Although it doesn't go into the battlefield.
Yeah, you have to cast the Shadowborn Apostle.
Well, you need Edgewalker. Okay, this combo's getting a little crazy. Another one of the cards that's in multiple decks, and we did get to see this one in action, is Mirror of the Forebears. It's an artifact. It says, as it enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type. That's a recurring theme in the set. Mm-hmm. And then you can pay one, and until end of turn, Mirror of the Forebears becomes a copy of target creature you control of the chosen type, except it's an artifact in addition to its other type. So it's very similar to Mirage Mirror, except it only copies creatures of the type you chose and only yours.
And
so it's way
less.
Worse than Mirage Mirror.
Well, it's two mana to it's cast one. And one to use instead of three and two for Mirage Mirror. So
okay.
It's a little cheaper, but yeah, it's very specific.
I think this is good in like the Dragon deck or the decks where your creatures are really expensive. So for one mana, you're kind of making one. But it's less good in like the Cat deck or one of the ones where like, cause you don't want to pay this to get like a copy of your two drop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's also Herald's Horn, a three drop. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. This is an artifact. Creature spells you cast of the chosen type cost one less to cast. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. If it's a creature card of the chosen type, you may reveal it and put it into your hand. So this is great in Tribal. It's a three mana. I mean, hey, red-white could use something like this.
Yeah.
In terms of just drawing you extra cards.
It's ramp and card draw, right?
Yeah.
On the same card.
On the same card for three mana. So pretty good. Again, need to be tribal for it to really work.
Yeah, I think if you're not tribal, you can't play basically any of these cards we just talked about.
Yeah.
Because they all require you to name a creature type.
I mean, you can play them. You're just not going to have a good time.
All right, well, let's move on to what we're calling the one-offs, which are, you know, single new cards. We're only going to talk about new cards here that have never been printed before. Yeah, talk about that one. This card seems very, very good, and it also has phasing, so I already like it.
This card is...
It seems great.
You know, this card would be really good with our spoiler card, too. With
that's a really good point.
The board wipe that we...
You'd float the mana,
yeah.
Do this, and then... Oh, that's a good point. It's not in the same deck as our spoiler card, though.
It's in the Edgar deck.
Yeah.
Teferi's Protection. Two in the white for an instant. My vote for best card of the set. That's
best
non-commander. Yeah.
Yeah, it might be.
Until your next turn, your life total can't change, and you have protection from everything.
So nothing can happen to you, basically.
What does that even mean? All permanents you control phase out. While they're phased out, they are treated as though they don't exist. They phase in before you untap during your next untap step, and then you exile the spell. So you cast this, and then as an instant, let's say someone's like, Kikijiki, make a million Zealous Conscripts. You're like... Sure. Go to combat? Sure. Swing them all at you? Teferi's Protection.
I have protection from everything. And all my stuff is gone, so you can't even touch my
instant
stuff.
Instant speed until the end of the next, until your next turn, your next untap. So you still get to untap. There's like almost no downside to playing this in any white deck other than you get a free pass. This just gives you a pass, like a get out of jail free card at any point.
A lot of these cards have a problem where like Faith's Reward or one of these cards, Second Sunrise, where you get your stuff back, but then the next person gets to go and they can still attack and do stuff. You get protection and your stuff is gone until your next turn. So if you say, go, Jimmy, on your upkeep, I just play this. I'm just safe until my next turn. I have protection from everything. None of my stuff's there. You can't do anything.
There are so many times I'm playing when I'm like, ugh, if I only had one more guaranteed turn, I know I could pull this off, but I don't have that, so I got to take this line. Teferi's Protection for three mana gives you that. 100% protection.
I bet there's some loops you can get in where you just play this over and over.
Well, it exiles itself, so you have to find a way to copy
it. Yeah, to get it back.
Or to get it in Nav Exile, to like Rift Sweep it of sorts.
Yeah.
Either way, this card is ridiculous. It really is ridiculous. I am kind of in awe at this card.
It's like super fog.
It's super fog. It's super fog for all your permanents. It stops board wipes. It stops single target removal. It stops just combo, like dying to combo.
It's
like
really
that
good.
Kiki player will be all tapped out, and then you get one more turn to stop them. Like, that is absurd to me.
Yeah, that card seems great. You may be right. It may be the best card in the set. It's definitely going to cause a lot of times where somebody thinks they're going to win, and they do not win.
Yeah.
Because you have this three mana spell.
If someone's holding up three mana and has white in it, it could be Teferi's Protection.
From the Enola deck, the Wizards deck, there's a new Magus. Magus of the Mind. Four blue boo. Human Wizard, 4/5.
Four boo-boo.
Four blue-blue. Bay blue, tap and sacrifice the Magus of the Mind. This is in the Magus It's a new card in this cycle that they've been going on for years. Yeah. It's the Magus version of Mind's Desire. So you, pay blue, tap, sacrifice the Magus of the Mind, shuffle your library, then exile the top X cards, where X is 1 plus the number of spells cast this turn. And then until end of turn, you can play those cards that were exiled that way without paying their mana cost. So this is just a Magus version. It's the first time we've seen it. It seems really good just because it's just kind of a card that Storm decks like.
There's Magus of the Wheel as well, which is the...
the Wheel of Fortune, Magus of the Abyss, Magus of the Will, Magus of the Everything, Jar.
As well, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a Magus of the Jar?
Yeah, Memory Jar on a stick. There's a whole bunch of them.
The only downside is that now the original spell costs 4 blue-blue. This costs 4 blue-blue as well as a blue and a tap to activate it. So it costs a little bit more than the original spell. But it's a way to have redundancy in the deck if you're looking for another effect like Mind's Desire, which is pretty good.
Well, I would also say that what you can do is play this and then wait till your next turn. And now you get this effect for one mana where it used to cost you six.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're able to flash it in at the end of the turn and then go off and not have to spend six mana to storm off with Mind's Desire, then it seems like you're in great shape.
If anybody casts Magus of the Mind and doesn't immediately activate it to do stuff, you kill that card.
Yeah.
They're going to go off. They wouldn't cast it otherwise.
Well, you never can tell.
You never know. You never know.
You never know. All right, Shifting Shadow. It's a 2 in a red enchantment aura with some of my favorite art. That's how I feel every day, waking up in the morning.
I'm like, I'm awesome.
I'm awesome. It's like you're either the tiny dinosaur from Jurassic Park or you're like the Ur-Dragon.
Choose Ur-Dragon then.
Yeah, right. So this is an enchantment aura. You enchant creature. Enchanted creature has haste and at the beginning of your upkeep, destroy this creature. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card. Put that card onto the battlefield and attach Shifting Shadow to it. Then put all the other cards revealed this way on the bottom of your library in a random order. So you get creatures every single turn that will always be different and are always changing. And for 3 mana, that creature always has haste.
Once you paid the original for 3 mana, you just get a creature with haste every turn.
Yeah, unless someone
destroys...
Now,
what will it be?
Yeah.
Yeah, someone can destroy the... or exile the creature, right? Is it when it dies?
No, it's just at the beginning of your upkeep, you destroy this creature, and then you do the other stuff.
Oh, so if it dies before the upkeep.
Yeah, if it dies in combat, it dies before upkeep. Doesn't mean you have to attack with it, but yeah, really, really interesting. The Shifting Shadow has to kill the creature for the card to work, to do the rest of its text.
Interesting card. Here's sort of a new effect. I don't know that we've had... I could be wrong about this, but I don't know that we've had a card that punishes specifically this thing before. So it's Crimson Honor Guard. It's 3 red-red for a Vampire Knight. It's a 4/5 has trample, but it says at the beginning of each player's end step, Crimson Honor Guard deals 4 damage to that player unless he or she controls a commander. So it sort of punishes my decks that don't play their commander a lot.
Yeah, I don't think this kind of effect has ever been done.
I can't think of one off the top of my head. And 4 damage is quite a lot.
Yeah, it's a 5 mana spell to get out, but it's kind of like Sulfuric Vortex, but on crack. You know, it's like going a little bit harder in the paint. It's each player's end step and deals 4 damage to them unless they control a commander. So it's a lot of damage over time.
Especially if you're in a deck that's not really likely to cast its commander or not going to do it quickly.
Yeah.
Anyway, I kind of liked that because it felt like it was aimed at me.
Very unique ability.
Yeah.
It was definitely not aimed at you. All right. Goad has returned with Disrupt Decorum. Decorum. Disrupt Decorum. Darn it. I made a mistake. I said I hadn't made one today yet.
No, there it goes.
It came back, yeah. 2 red-red for... I haven't made a mistake since my last mistake. Boom!
Boom!
2 red-red for a sorcery. Goad all creatures you don't control. Until your next turn, those creatures attack each combat if able and attack a player other than you if able. Dinner and politics don't mix. Very true. This is a great card, actually. There are a lot of, like, Master Warcraft is a card that I always want to play in decks that allows you to control combat steps, but this just forces everyone to attack everyone.
Everyone to attack each other, too. They can't attack you.
Yeah.
It seems actually pretty good and can cause a lot of mayhem. And it gets rid of their blockers, right? Because they have to attack. So, yeah, I kind of like that card.
Yeah, and like it may cause a lot of also hate amongst the table if people don't know how to deal with it correctly.
Well, and there's also, you know, you think, oh, it won't cause hate because the players know that they have to attack each other and you caused it. But the thing is, if you're in a 4-person game and you play that, when it comes to my turn, I have to attack somebody, but I still have a choice. I can attack this person or that person. So each individual person can be mad that I didn't choose the other one. So there is still some responsibility on my head.
Add a couple of creatures in there that are like, this one has Annihilator. Oh, I'm so sorry. It has to come at someone. You know, like you're going to make some enemies if you're forcing the right creatures to attack with Disrupt Decorum.
I like it. Here's an interesting one. I had this in the Game Nights game. I don't want to spoil how it turned out, but I'll just say that it took me a long time holding it in my hand over a few turns to figure out how to use it in a good manner. So it's Fractured Identity.
You used it very well, by the way.
Yeah, but I was staring at it for a long time because, well, it's three, a blue and a white for a sorcery. It says exile target non-land permanent. That seems good. Five mana, but that seems good. But then it says each player other than its controller creates a token that's a copy of it. So
very bizarre.
It's super bizarre. You cast this and then it's exiled from the person you cast it from, but everybody else gets one. It makes you go, well, geez, if that thing's bad and I want to get rid of it, do I want three more of it to exist? I mean, I want to have one probably, but I don't know if I want two other ones from my other two opponents.
Yeah. I mean, you have to watch Game Nights to see what happened with this card because it
definitely has interesting interactions that you wouldn't think of, and it combos in weird ways with other cards. I was thinking about this, maybe a Zedru deck.
Oh, interesting.
Wants to give, you know, Zedru's trying to give stuff to people. Well, this gives three of it to your opponent, so you could do your own thing, right? Because it says, also like a Nekusar deck might want, like, do this on your own. Oh, sorry. My Nekusar is five colors, so I can have this card. Yours probably isn't, so you can stop writing your comment right now. But if in Nekusar, like Howling Mine, now there are three Howling Mines. I don't care who has the Howling Mine. I just want more of them.
It's interesting with Zedru because he wants permanence that you control it with other people, but this thing of having other people have stuff is still kind of in the spirit of the Zedru deck.
There's some cards that sort of like are bad for you if you have them, so you can cast that, give it to everybody. It's interesting. I don't know.
Okay, all right. Traverse the Outlands is a 4 and a green for a sorcery. Search your library for up to X basic land cards, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. Wait a second. Hold on.
Five mana.
Wait. But doesn't green have a lot of power on their creatures? Put those cards onto the battlefield, tap, then shuffle your library. So for five mana, you could rape yourself for like five lands.
Easily, yeah. Think of like, we play Explosive Vegetation, right? That just goes in a lot of green decks. That's four mana, get two basic lands.
Yeah, this is five mana.
This is almost always going to be like more than that. It's usually going to be at least five lands, right?
I would hope so. I mean, it could also be zero lands if you don't have any creatures in play. If you cast this and then someone like exiles your target, your biggest creature.
That's a good point. But what if you're like in Xenagos, right? You give your creature double power, you attack, and then you cast this, and now all of a sudden
you have every land in your deck on the library. This is good in two-color decks. A lot worse in three-color decks.
Yeah, I could easily see it being where, like, listen, I can get 12 lands, but I only have eight basics that I can get. Hey, but so what? Five mana, get 80 of your basics in play is still good, right? This card seems bonkers to me. I think that's going to be one of those cards that people play it and everybody groans because they just have so many lands now. And then think of like Gitrog monster decks that just want to get lands into play to do crazy stuff with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that card's really good. So that's, again, we're not going to talk about every new card because we're going to go over each of the pre-cons. Those are sort of the highlights, the stuff that stuck out to us that we wanted to talk about. But now we're going to move on to some of the notable reprints. We won't go over these a lot. We just wanted to mention some of them. Because, you know, one of the things that's good about the pre-cons is they tend to be very high on the value scale. So you tend to buy a pre-con, it costs $35 or so, and you actually get, you know, $60 worth of cards or whatever. Now, I will say what tends to happen is that's the price at the start, and then because of all the reprints in this, the prices will get depressed for a little while. So we're going to talk about we won't call it specific prices necessarily, but, you know, those are going to change because of the reprint. But then a lot of these cards are a little bit expensive for a reason, and they will tend to climb back up over time. So,
and we've seen that with a lot of cards too, like Commander Sphere and stuff, and like even Arachnogenesis, like cards that definitely like are underwhelming cards at first, or cards that you just kind of like, oh, that's really powerful, but you know it seems to be printing a lot. They definitely raise up over time.
Look at like Chromatic Lantern that got reprinted last year, and it's already really way back up to what it was before, so the reprint didn't actually hurt the price that much. So
I would suggest listening to the episode we did with Jason Alt about looking into Commander 2070 and Tribal and sort of what to expect, and he was spot on.
Turns out Jason knows about finance. But this is also good to think about because it might be time to pick up these cards right when this product comes out, if these are cards you wanted, because they're going to be sort of the lowest they're going to be for a while, and then they're going to tend to climb back up, probably.
Usually the more they relate to the set they come out in. So, for instance, Chromatic Lantern went up because four-color mana bases are just harder to achieve now. So the more they relate to the set that they come out in, the higher potential they have to go through the roof. So
I'm not going to read all these cards. The text on them. I'm just going to read off some of the sort of standout value stuff. So Black Market is a card.
Fun ramp.
Got reprinted a few years ago, but it's still, you know, above $4. Door of Destinies. just a few dollars. Captivating Vampire, actually quite expensive, and it's in the Vampire deck. So
really cool card, too.
Yeah, that's a great card. Blade of the Blood Chief, again, in the Vampire deck, another card that was just surprisingly costly. I think partially because Vampires as a tribe doesn't have a ton of support, so the good tribal vampire cards are right. just in higher demand.
My girl.
Yeah, your girl, Marchesa the Black Rose.
I think this is the first time she's been reprinted since...
Yeah, I don't think
since
she's...
Conspiracy.
Yeah, so...
She was never that expensive to begin with, but it's just another great way to get a Marchesa.
It's know. A good commander. I think she's probably like $6 or $7, I think.
Yeah, that's about that.
She might have gone down...
It's a good commander? It's a great commander.
Sorry, it's a great commander. But there was only one place to get it before, and now there's a second, so that's good. Decree of Pain, which is one of the better black board wipes, draws you a card for every creature it destroys, so that's pretty good. That was creeping up there. I'll let you... Haven Ghoul Lich... is another one.
I
was surprised.
This
yeah, this is one that lets you cast creature cards from.
Oh, right, graveyards. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And it gains activated abilities. So it's like.
Silas
Wren. Nin the Pain Artist.
Yep.
The Pain Artist. Sorry,
another
singular.
Sort of surprisingly worth a few dollars. Now, none of these are worth like $20. They're all like $4 or $5 or so. But
yeah, the big one here is Sign of the Ur-Dragon. That for sure is a very high value reprint. This card is also just great. So many decks are built around this.
I mean, Sion is probably still the best dragon commander, so even with Ur-Dragon. So yeah.
Scourge of Valkus. This is one of my favorite dragon cards in the Dragon Tribal deck. And look at all the red in its mana cost, too.
Yep. Utvara Hellkite, another one that's not super expensive, but, you know, every dragon deck wants an Utvara, so
yeah,
that's a good one.
There's Rakshak Golden Cub.
This was surprisingly expensive.
I think it's because it's an old card, right?
Yeah, and they're just maybe it hadn't been reprinted or something. I don't know for sure, but it was surprisingly costly, and it's good in the 99 of a cat deck.
Yeah, and this is a card that I think you should definitely pick up because the cat tribal deck and this go perfectly hand-in-hand, so...
I mean, it was reprinted in this set, so yeah. If you need it for something else, or you're not buying that, it's gonna go down now, and I would grab it. Yeah,
Leonin Shikari, which is sort of the staple for any equipment deck. You can essentially activate equip costs at instant speed, so pretty good.
Yeah, and that's a good point, right? Because that the equipment decks span the spectrum of all the colors, so it's Leonin Shikari just isn't something that's only going in a cat deck. It's gonna go in a lot, so it's probably gonna climb back up over time. The big one, I think the most expensive, listen, we could be wrong, we're not finance guys, but I believe that the most expensive reprint overall is Mirari's Wake.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly what the price point on it is right now, but that is reprinted in the cat deck, and that's a really good card that goes in a ton of decks, so I'm happy to see that reprint. And then Quietus Spike was another one that just...
Speak?
Yeah, there's some other ones that are, you know, in the $2.50 to $3 range. We didn't call them all out, but these are sort of the standouts. Nothing huge.
No, and I'm not that surprised actually because I think a lot of the cards in the set, I think they're valuing them a little higher. I think they're going to go up.
I think also, like Jason has talked about this when he's on our show, it's if they actually put too much value in any of the decks, then what happens is people tend to, you know, like stores or finance people tend to buy them, crack them open, and then nobody can actually find the pre-cons.
Yeah. I mean, and that happened. That's happened like 2 or 3 times now over the past sort of few years.
True Name Nemesis kind of caused that, and the Atraxa deck is more popular than the rest, and nobody can find that now.
Honestly, too, I really hate the idea of people cracking open pre-cons to get one card out of it. That happened with True Name Nemesis, and I would much rather them be an Eternal Masters pack or like an Iconic Masters kind of thing because that's just a better way to get, I think, honestly, more copies of a card out there. So I'm not too worried about it. There seems to be a lot of value in the cards already in here. So
I mean, I guarantee, and we didn't do the full breakdown of the decks, but they always do it, and you know, it's like $35 or $40 for the deck, and you get like $90 to $100 worth of value, and it's probably going to be similar this time.
Right.
So that's good. Because a lot of cards, it's just hard to have 100 cards and they're all worth 35 cents.
I agree.
Okay, well, we added a new category. So we haven't done this in the past, but I thought it would be interesting. Let's talk about some notable not reprinted cards. So there had been speculation previously about what cards would be included in this set. And, you know, once again, Jason Ault turned out to be, and I know he was sort of riffing off some other article by somebody else. I know Jason's the one that came on our show and talked about it, so he opened our eyes to it. There's a certain class of cards, and he was correct. They did not reprint anything that sort of affected all tribal things like coat of arms.
Yeah. It just would not have made the play experience that fun, I don't think, honestly.
It totally made sense when he talked about it, but, you know, we easily could have seen coat of arms in one of these decks, and it wouldn't have been like, what are they thinking?
I would have expected coat of arms in one of these decks.
Yeah. Anyway, we wanted to talk about the stuff that's not getting reprinted, because if you're fast here, because EDH players, they move a little bit slower, you might be able to grab some of these, because a lot of these are very good in the decks, before the price sort of jumps. Some of these, the boat has sailed, but maybe you'll get lucky and be able to grab some, or at least...
Or even at like a store or in a bargain bin box, you might be able to find some of these.
Yeah, so we just wanted to go through some of the ones. Now, Coat of Arms is one that any tribal deck that's sort of going wide in any way is going to want. So, you know, maybe Wizards doesn't want it because they're not as focused on the power of their creatures, but they might, honestly, because Anala's making tokens. Dragons, maybe not. You're putting out fewer dragons. But Cats... Vampires for sure are going to want this card.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just pumps all of your stuff.
Mana Echoes is actually just a very powerful card, and I'm not surprised they didn't reprint it, considering I think it's higher in the value level as well.
Well, it went up on speculation that they wouldn't reprint it, and people were right. So it might be too late to get Mana Echoes. Again, though, is it going to push even higher now because it didn't get reprinted? Like, people before were just guessing it wouldn't be reprinted. Now we know it's not being reprinted, so... I'm not sure what that's going to do. Patriarch's Bidding is another one we talked about with Jason.
Yeah. The thing is, the demand will curb how high it actually goes, because if not that many people are looking to even just get Mana Echoes in general, but the fact that it's an older card, I think, gives it a higher risk of staying at the higher price or even going higher.
Yeah. And I think now, again, with the tribal theme, everyone's going to be just making tribal decks for the next like little bit.
Yeah. Patriarch's Bidding as well. It's a very powerful card for tribal. Each player chooses a creature type, and then you return all the creature types of that way to your graveyard to the battlefield, so everyone gets the benefit from it, which is one of those, again, these cards affect everyone, so that's probably why they didn't put them in the decks.
It's possible that these cards won't rise anymore in the short term, because in your playgroup, there might be a situation where for the next couple of months, there are a number of tribal decks.
Right.
And so Coat of Arms isn't great, or you know, Patriarch's Bidding isn't as good, but then 3 or 4 months down the road, when everything sort of settled back to normal, and people are... you know, not playing their tribal decks all the time because they're not the newest deck they've got, then at that point, Patriarch's Bidding, you know, maybe slots into your deck now and it's usable because you're not often facing other tribal decks.
Be careful otherwise.
Yeah.
Descendant's Path, one of my favorite arts by Therese Nielsen.
This card is going to be sweet.
Yeah, especially in these tribal decks. Yeah. It's not great, though, in multiplayer because just at your upkeep, it's sort of like, it takes forever for it to start going, but still a good card.
We should read that one because I don't know if people know it.
Oh, yeah. So this is from Avacyn Restored? Yeah. Yes. At the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card that shares a creature type with a creature you control, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Ooh, cast.
Yeah.
So if you have an Eldrazi-only deck, you could cast.
It just has to share a creature type with a creature you control, too. So it doesn't have to share it with all of them or anything. So you could maybe even play this in a deck that just was heavy in one tribe or had two tribes.
Right.
And it's an enchantment. It does that every turn. So that's just a lot of value.
Yeah, especially because you get the card for free out of, you know,
five color dragons. It's really good because you just get so much mana value.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Another one is Belby's Portal.
Belby.
Which is sort of similar to like Quicksilver Amulet or something. So it's a 5-drop artifact. It enters the battlefield. You choose a creature type. And then you can pay 3 and tap the portal and put a creature card of the chosen type from your hand onto the battlefield. So it very much is like Quicksilver Amulet, but it only works for certain creature types.
Yeah. It also costs 1 less to activate, but 1 more to cast. So the first time that you use it is going to be equal to the same amount as a Quicksilver Amulet activation and usage. But for 3 mana for the rest of the game, you get to do that for tribal stuff. So it's, I would put, if you are a tribal deck, this goes in over Quicksilver Amulet.
Probably, yeah. Especially if you're a tribal with like a lot of big effects.
Yeah, big stuff. Yeah. Steely Resolve, which is pretty good. 1 in the green for a 2-mana enchantment. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Creatures of the chosen type have shroud.
So you kind of, what's the other one? Asceticism?
Asceticism,
yeah. Yeah. So I could see that being very, very strong in... It's tough in the cat deck, right? Because you want to be able to equip stuff. So shroud's not good.
Oh, right. Good point.
But in some of the decks where you're not sort of...
targeting your own things
as much. Yeah, targeting your own things as much, it might be good. Again, dragons, you just don't want to spend 7 mana on a dragon and they just go Swords to Plowshares, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a good one. There's Mutavault, which is a land that turns into a creature that has all creature types and that can help you just get to critical mass. If, you know, some of these require certain amounts of things to get going or to have a good effect, certain amounts of, you know, cats or wizards or whatever. And then Urza's Incubator is one that didn't get reprinted. And it's an artifact that when it... you choose a creature type, and then all creatures of that type cost 2 less to cast.
Yeah.
So it's really good because it only costs 3 mana to put out.
Yeah, and it ramps every card in your hand, essentially.
All the
tribal cards, yeah.
Yeah, so those are some cards that did not get reprinted. A lot of those are, say, choose a creature type, so they don't actually work for your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really good, and I think people were waiting to see if they would be reprinted. We know they're not, so something to look at. I'm not saying go run out and buy them right now, but if you're fast enough on some of that stuff, you might be able to grab it before it spikes.
Yeah.
It just depends, yeah.
All right, to the listeners, how do you guys think Commander 2017 looks? Good, bad, awesome, great, terrible, mediocre? Let us know.
That scale was all over the place.
Yeah, it was all over the place. And it had it was just like ping, 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 ping. It was like ping-ponging back and forth. I would like to know which deck or legendary creature you're the most excited for. And also which deck you think is the weakest and the strongest, based on our Game Nights episode, maybe. Because I thought for sure the episode was going to go one way, and then it did not. So
yeah, I wish it went the original way, but it didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was still sweet. Got to see the decks in action. I think all the decks were pretty sweet, and they all played very differently as far as the strategies they were employing, which I thought was made the game cool, right?
Yeah, for sure. Everyone had the very specific thing that they were doing, and you could tell that was what the deck meant to do.
Yeah. I'm very interested to see what people are most excited about from the set. Is there, like, from the...
Yeah, some combo that we haven't seen or something, too.
Yeah, or what legendary... You know, from the last Commander product, we could tell pretty early on that Atraxa was going to be, like, the most popular one, and I'm curious to see what this time everyone's just sort of naturally gravitating towards. So let us know that. Email... comment section, Twitter, Facebook, all good places. We would love to hear what new legendary or deck you're most excited about.
Yep.
Something I'm excited about. You know what else is awesome?
You know what else is awesome?
Is our sponsor,
CardKingdom.com/C17.
Make sure to use that affiliate link, /C17 this time rather than the normal one, to order your Commander product. It really will help to support the show and keep Card Kingdom supporting us so we can keep making this show and Game Nights and other awesome content that you enjoy.
And I've seen some comments asking, like, hey, I made some purchases in the past. I forgot to use the affiliate link. It's really easy. All you have to do is email Card Kingdom. Their email is available everywhere. Or tweet at them and be like, hey, my name is so-and-so. Or, hey, this is the email. Or, hey, here's my order number. I meant to use the affiliate link. Can you just apply this and let them know? And it's very easy for them to look at, find the order, be like, okay, great. This is what... You know, this would have gone through the affiliate
link.
We'll
give the guys credit for that, basically.
Yeah. Which is great, and it does help out a lot. So if you've ever made the purchase and realized you didn't use the link, it takes less than a minute to fix that issue. Just email, talk to Card Kingdom. They will be there and read the email.
We really appreciate the support. Another way to support the show is to use Ultra Pro products. Ultra Pro, one of our great sponsors. Again, they've got all this awesome Commander 2017 themed stuff. You know, somebody was asking us about the banner. So we've got a scroll banner with Nicol Bolas on it behind us if you're watching the video, which is a new thing that Ultra Pro tried. Now, it was popular, so it's hard to find, but you can still find it out there, sort of online retailers and local gaming stores. And it's a pretty sweet thing. It's like cloth, and it's not like a normal just paper poster. It unrolls. So that's something to look out for that I think a lot of people would be excited. You know, we like to use it on our set.
So. It looks so good. Yeah. I keep looking back at it being like, man, what a great low set piece.
We just need them to make about 10 more of those, and we can fill the whole area with them. And 10 might be too many, maybe like 5 or 6.
10 might be too many.
Yeah.
Time to talk about the end step, where we mention and discuss something cool outside the world of Magic. I got something. Oh, you got something?
No, go.
I was just going to say basketball.
Oh, yeah. This is sweet, actually. I'm so excited that this is happening.
Yeah. So I grew up playing golf. I grew up playing ping pong and racket sports, and all of the sports are very much form and precision and – I was always bad at ball sports. So soccer, I trip over my feet all the time. Basketball, I just can't dribble. I can't shoot. I can't do anything. And here's the thing. All the sports I mentioned earlier do not involve me physically being in contact with anyone.
That's true.
Right? It's just like you on
they're
your
non-contact
side.
Sports, yeah,
non-contact sports. And so recently I started to play basketball more with my friends. And Josh has been playing basketball forever, I feel like. And it's been a blast. And I'm dedicated to getting good at it now.
I walked into the office today, and he's like, got a basketball. He's like, I bought a basketball.
And a pump.
Yep. I'm like, this is sweet. This is awesome. So hopefully it'll get me out running around more, too, because
it's such a good workout. Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah. Especially because it's been really hot in L.A., so I just sweat endlessly. But at the same time, you're playing a game. And it's the same reason I love playing Magic. It's a game. You're having fun while doing it, and then you feel like you're improving every time, too.
I often say that Magic is like basketball. It's like a sport. But for learning, right? So, you know, it's great for your kids because it sort of tricks them into learning math and reading comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to enjoy the game. And basketball is the same. It tricks you into doing cardio and strength training and stuff like that. So
yeah,
they're great. I'm really excited. We're going to play more basketball.
It's going to be great.
I'm so rusty, but then we can challenge Marshall one of these days.
Oh, I heard that guy.
And all
sucks.
Those guys. He's like 6'4", though. You don't even have to be that good when you're 6'4".
Not when I'm defending you. You'll feel like
Marshall.
Yeah, you feel like you're 2'5" when I'm defending you.
Just don't hold it up there.
Come on.
He's just like this.
Have you even dribbled yet? Hey.
Hey.
Hey, I'm on your team. Pass it to me. That's what I have to go to.
This is a good instep. I like this one. Something else I like is the Masters of Modern podcast.
You know what else you like.
Masters of Modern podcast, our sister podcast. They talk about the modern format and all things competitive magic. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman are the hosts. Kessler actually got to preview his own card, which was Kess Dissident Mage, because of the name of the card was so similar to his name. They were like, you got to preview this one. So that's pretty
yeah,
sweet.
That
I like
is
that
really
Wizards
awesome.
Did that. We're also going to have Kessler on an episode very soon because we had asked him to do a build of Kess. So we're going to go through a build of one of the new legendaries. We're going to do that with a couple of them. We'll have our friend Josh Kim on.
Yeah.
We've got some other ones planned. So look forward to that. Again, a lot of extra content this month because of this Commander release.
Tons of extra content.
Yeah. You can find the Master of Modern podcast on Twitter at the MMcast, also collected.company, which is our Magic Hub online.
And you can check out the video versions of this podcast thanks to our editor, Terry Robertson. Make sure you go to youtube.com/the Command Zone podcast, which also features an intro and outro graphic from Jeffrey Palmer, who does living card animations. You can find him on Twitter at livingcardsmtg. Since we're talking about a bunch of new cards and you can't look them up right now because Gather and a lot of things haven't been updated yet necessarily, make sure you check out the videos. You're gonna need them.
That's a really good point. Videos are best for these Commander 2017.
Anytime we talk about a lot of cards.
Videos
sure.
are always best.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're driving, then please listen and don't watch.
Don't watch.
Safety first, everybody.
Aha!
All right. Thanks for listening.
And we will see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.